This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, hand-roasting coffee in small batches since 1966. With 7 locations in Greater Portland, including new locations on Hawthorne and in Vancouver.
Good morning. This is the KABU Morning News for Wednesday, January 3rd, 2007. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Martha Odom. Coming up on this morning's news, Clackamas County has agreed to pay a developer triple the value for 36 acres of residential and industrial land in the path of a proposed highway.
And Pennsylvania's largest newspaper is planning to lay off 68 newsroom employees, or 16% of its staff.
And in France, squatters moved into a vacant office block in Paris and also set up a tent city to raise awareness of homeless families. Portland area weather calls for rain with highs in the mid-50s. A variety of events last night commemorated the 3,000th U.S. military death in Iraq. The First Unitarian Church in Portland held an interfaith service, which was billed as an interfaith religious service, not a political event. Over 300 people attended the event commemorating the 3,000 Americans and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis who have died in this administration's war of aggression. The First Unitarian Church held similar services when the death toll passed the 1,000 and 2,000 marks. This is the first time that the gathering was interdenominational. Across the river, Vancouver for Peace is gathered along Mill Plain Boulevard. Earlier yesterday, they lobbied Senators Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell, as well as Representative Brian Baird.
And in Hillsborough, a sheriff's deputy stopped a 14-year-old boy at the wheel of his parents' car and shot him after he emerged with a Russian-designed SKS assault rifle and made statements that he wanted the police to kill him. The Washington County Sheriff's Office said he was shot an unknown number of times and hospitalized. The shooting followed a traffic stop shortly before midnight Monday for speeding and lighting violations. The deputy, uninjured, was placed on administrative leave, as law enforcement agencies do when an officer is involved in a shooting.
The sinkhole that swallowed a sewer truck last week will keep the intersection at Southeast 16th Avenue and Oak Street in Portland closed for weeks. Dakota Inyo-Swan, Portland Transportation spokeswoman, said city crews need time to investigate what caused the hole and to repair it. The sinkhole could have been caused by leaking water, sewer pipes, or the nearby Buckman Pool that has had leaks in the past. Inyo-Swan said the sewer pipe had been inspected by camera in July 2000, and engineers would be very surprised if the sewer pipe caused the hole.
Clackamas County agreed to pay a prominent developer triple the value established by the county's assessor for 36 acres of residential and industrial land in the path of a proposed highway. Under the terms of a deal, Terry Emmerich will receive $15.3 million for the site, which is a headquarters for his company, Emmerich International. The property borders Oregon 212 in the Clackamas Industrial Area south of Happy Valley. According to records from the County Department of Assessment and Taxation, Emmerich's land had a fair market value of $5.16 million on January 1st of 2006. In addition to the property payment, Emmerich will receive $845,000 in moving expenses, permission to stay on the land for 5 years, and approval to charge others for using the property. The county wants Emmerich's land along Oregon 212 so it can build the Sunrise Corridor, a proposed highway to link Interstate 205 with the fast-growing communities of Happy Valley and Damascus to the east. The county determines market value, which is different from tax-assessed value, by examining buildings, zoning, rental rates, interest rates, sales of similar properties, and other factors. This from the Oregonian.
Pennsylvania's largest newspaper, the Philadelphia Inquirer, said yesterday that it expects to lay off 68 newsroom employees, about 16% of its editorial staff. The Inquirer and the Philadelphia Daily News, both part of Knight Ridder, Inc., were sold in March to McClatchy Company. 3 months later, McClatchy sold the papers to Philadelphia Media Holdings, an investment group led by Brian Tierney, now the paper's chief executive and publisher. In November, Tierney announced that declining ad revenues would require contract concessions and that layoffs in the Inquirer's 415-worker newsroom were unavoidable. Through buyouts in 2005, the Inquirer reduced its editorial staff from 500 to 425, and the Daily News cut its editorial staff from 130 to 105. The Newspaper Guild of Greater Philadelphia, which represents more than 900 editorial, advertising, circulation, and clerical employees at the Inquirer and Daily News, ratified a new contract last month. Amid looming layoffs, the union was forced to accept concessions in the 3-year contract, including changes in sick day benefits, the role of seniority during layoffs, and pension contributions. Without the concessions, more people would have been laid off.
When the new Congress convenes on January 4th, the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works will scrutinize the EPA's approach to clean air to ensure that the health of our families is protected. Commenting on last month's decision by the D.C. Court of Appeals to reject the U.S. EPA's 2004 smog rule, California Senator Barbara Boxer said, "I am pleased that the Court of Appeals has seen through EPA's transparent attempts to weaken implementation of the Clean Air Act rules for smog." This unanimous opinion from the Court of Appeals confirms that EPA's approach is illegal. EPA must now throw out this rule and start anew. The ruling came in response to a lawsuit filed by 7 state governments, the District of Columbia, environmental groups, and California's South Coast Air Quality Management District. For decades, under both Democratic and Republican administrations, the senator wrote, the EPA can set clean air standards by soliciting expert advice from leading independent scientists and developing scientific analysis in consultation with independent experts on the Clean Air Science Advisory Committee. This from the Environmental News Service.
In New Orleans, 7 policemen charged in a deadly shooting in the chaotic aftermath of Hurricane Katrina turned themselves in yesterday at the city jail. More than 200 supporters greeted them in a show of solidarity. Each of the indicted men faces at least one charge of murder or attempted murder in the September 4, 2005 shootings on the Danziger Bridge less than a week after the hurricane hit New Orleans. At least 2 people died and 4 people were wounded. Defense attorneys say the officers are innocent. Police say the officers were responding to a report of other officers down and that they thought one of the men, Ronald Madison, was reaching for a gun. Madison, a 40-year-old mentally retarded man, and James Brissett, 19, were killed on the bridge. The coroner said Madison was shot 7 times with 5 wounds in the back. Madison's brother Lance, who was also on the bridge and was cleared of attempted murder charge, said he and his brother were not armed.
The family of a man who was shot to death by police on his wedding day called for a special prosecutor's investigation as they began a 50-day vigil outside a police precinct, 1 day for each bullet fired. Sean Bell's mother, Valerie, said yesterday morning, "The thing that happened to my son shouldn't happen to anyone again." She said other family members and friends will take turns at the 24-hour, nearly 2-month vigil. Bell was killed November 25th, and 2 friends were wounded by police gunfire as they left Bell's bachelor party at a strip club in Queens. The plainclothes detectives involved had been staking out the club because of alleged criminal activity, police have said. None of the 3 men shot by police was armed. The shooting sparked criticism of the police department's use of deadly force and undercover tactics. At the vigil, a 12-foot banner hung nearby depicting the slain groom, his portrait surrounded by 50 illustrated bullet holes, and the words, "Never again." Bell's family says it wants to call attention to the lack of indictments in the case and to urge newly inaugurated Governor Eliot Spitzer to appoint a special prosecutor.
FBI agents documented more than two dozen incidents of possible mistreatment at the Guantanamo Bay military base, including one detainee whose head was wrapped in duct tape for chanting the Koran and another who pulled out his hair after hours in a sweltering room. Documents released yesterday by the FBI offered new details about the harsh interrogation practices used by military officials and contractors when questioning so-called enemy combatants. The report described a female guard who detainees said handled their genitals and wiped menstrual blood on their face. Another interrogator reportedly bragged to an FBI agent about dressing as a Catholic priest and baptizing a prisoner. Some military officials and contractors told FBI agents that the interrogation techniques had been approved by the Defense Department, including directly by former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. The documents were released in response to a public records request by the American Civil Liberties Union, which is suing Rumsfeld and others on behalf of former military detainees who say they were abused. Many of the incidents in the FBI documents have already been reported and are summarized in the ACLU's lawsuit.
The number of suicides in the nation's largest state prison system is climbing upward, and authorities in California and Texas are linking the increase to the rising number of inmates kept in solitary confinement. In California, there have been 41 suicides this year, the most in at least 6 years, and a 17% increase from 2005. Although an estimated 5% of California's inmates are housed in solitary confinement, 69% of last year's suicides occurred in units where inmates were isolated for 23 hours a day. About half the suicides this year were committed in such units. In Texas' prison system, which has 169,000 inmates, there have been 24 suicides this year. Most of the inmates who killed themselves were in some form of solitary confinement. Texas prisons are also reporting a big increase in attempted suicides, 652 so far this year compared to 559 in 2005. The number of attempted suicides this year is the most in nearly a decade. The figures of California and Texas are fueling a debate over whether solitary confinement is the best way to control or punish violent or dangerous inmates, particularly those who are mentally ill. This from the Gannett News Service.
A legislative panel said yesterday that New Jersey's death penalty should be abolished because it fails to deter murderers, burdens the state financially, and is inconsistent with evolving standards of decency. The New Jersey Death Penalty Study Commission argued that the death penalty should be replaced with life imprisonment in a maximum security jail without parole. The 13-person panel represented police, prosecutors, public defenders, the judiciary, and families of murder victims. It found the death penalty does not achieve its goal of deterring the worst murders and that the legal costs of it outweigh those of keeping a criminal in prison for life. New Jersey conducted its last execution in 1963 and then suspended its death penalty because of uncertainty about the views of the U.S. Supreme Court, which reinstated capital punishment in 1976. New Jersey's current death penalty law dates from 1982. 38 of the U.S. 50 states have the death penalty, all use lethal injection except Nebraska, which still uses the electric chair. Making life imprisonment the ultimate penalty in New Jersey would ensure public safety and the rights of murder victims' families while removing the risk of executing someone in error. This from Reuters.
The U.S. dollar has fallen further against sterling and other major currencies as analysts await a slew of economic data due out later this week. The dollar also slipped against the euro and the yen, although trading was thin on U.S. markets. Economic concerns saw the dollar fall 14% against the pound last year. The minutes from the U.S. Federal Reserve's last interest rate meeting out today could provide some indication of whether interest rate cutting is in the offing. Suggestions that the Fed may cut rates in response to a slowdown in the U.S. economy, allied to the fact that rates are rising in the U.K. and Europe, has pushed the dollar lower in recent months. This is from the BBC.
President Bush intends to reveal a new Iraq strategy within days. He is expected to make a speech that will reveal a plan to send more U.S. troops to Iraq to focus on ways of bringing greater security rather than training Iraqi forces. The move comes with figures from Iraqi ministries suggesting that deaths among civilians are at a record high. The U.S. president arrived back in Washington on Monday after a week-long holiday at the ranch in Texas. The exact mission of the extra troops in Iraq is still under discussion, according to officials, but it is likely to focus on providing security rather than training Iraqi forces. The proposal, when it comes, will be highly controversial. Already, one senior Republican senator has called it Alice in Wonderland. This from the BBC.
Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki says he wants to step down as prime minister. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, al-Maliki said that if he is offered a second term, he will not take it and wishes to end his first term early. Also, an advisor to al-Maliki said a man was being held for videotaping the execution of Saddam Hussein, adding that the man being held was an official who supervised the hanging. The execution of Saddam has inflamed sectarian protests with outbreaks of violence and come in for heavy criticism from both Iraqis and the international community. An Iraqi prosecutor who was present for Saddam's execution has told the Associated Press that he saw two of the government officials taking video of the execution using the lights that were there for the official taping of the hanging. Meanwhile, the two men convicted with Saddam Hussein for crimes against humanity are likely to be executed tomorrow. There are reports that Barzan al-Turkidi, Saddam's half-brother and former intelligence chief, and Awad al-Bandar, a former chief judge, could be hanged as early as Thursday morning. The pair had been due to be executed alongside Saddam, but it had been postponed due to the religious holiday, Eid al-Adha. Yet Saddam was hanged on Saturday, the first day of Eid al-Adha holiday, which is held to be a day of mercy and feasting in the Islamic world.
Saddam Hussein's execution at the start of the Muslim festival Eid al-Adha has angered Iraqis and others across the Middle East. Saddam was hanged on what is held to be a day of mercy and feasting in the Islamic world. The day is usually celebrated with the slaughter of a lamb, which represents the innocent blood of Ishmael, who was sacrificed by his father, the prophet Abraham, to honor God. The Kurdish judge who at first presided over Saddam's trial told reporters that the execution at the beginning of the festival was illegal under Iraqi law, besides violating the customs of Islam. The judge said that under Iraqi law, no verdict should be implemented during the official holidays or religious festivals. Libya denounced the timing of the execution and announced 3 days of official mourning. The Eid celebrations were canceled. The government of Saudi Arabia also condemned the timing of the execution. And the video of the execution, taken on a mobile phone of Saddam being taunted by his executioners in his final moments, has exacerbated tensions between Sunnis and Shias. This, along with images of Saddam smiling at those taunting him from below the gallows, has evidently drawn widespread sympathy for Saddam. The Sunni Association of Muslim Scholars issued a statement condemning the execution, saying this was an execution carried out by the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki for the Americans. This from the IPS News Service.
New Iraqi government figures find that the number of Iraqi civilians killed every month continues to rise. The Interior Ministry says 1,930 Iraqis died last month, 3.5 times the number killed in January of 2006. Other sources have issued significantly higher figures for civilian deaths in September and October of 2006. The Iraqi Interior Ministry statistics suggest that more than 12,000 civilians were killed in violence during 2006, with half the last 4 months of the year. In the same time, more than 800 U.S. troops were killed, and violence is at record levels with 140 reported attacks on the troops daily. Just before the new year, the total number of U.S. troops killed since the March 2003 invasion passed 3,000. The figures have been disputed and do not include those injured in attacks who died later from their wounds. An official U.N. estimate in October put the number of civilian deaths that month at 3,700. The Iraqi Health Ministry also reported civilian death toll in Baghdad alone of more than 2,600 for September of 2006. With all the trouble of compiling accurate numbers, correspondents say the upward trend is clear and supported by evidence from the ground. Most of those killed are victims of sectarian violence between the minority Sunni and the majority Shia Muslims.
Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi has said he will campaign at the United Nations for a global ban on the death penalty. This comes as Italian politicians from both the left and the right have been expressing disgust at the execution of former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. Italy took one of the 10 non-permanent Security Council seats this week. The Italian ambassador to the UN has already called on the General Assembly to re-examine a document presented for debate last month. Italy presented proposals for a moratorium on the death penalty at the UN Assembly in 1994 and again in 1995. Last July, the Italian Parliament appointed a cross-party motion urging the government to table yet another moratorium proposal, but this came to nothing because of a disagreement among Italy's EU partners. The outcry had also been reflected by almost universal condemnation in the Italian press of the press leaks and videos of the hanging.
The Daily Telegraph of London reported yesterday that UN peacekeepers and civilian staff were raping and abusing children as young as 12 years old in southern Sudan. The newspaper, in a story posted on its website, said it had gathered accounts of more than 20 young victims in the town of Juba of UN civilian and peacekeeping staff forcing them to have sex. The report appeared on the first day of work for UN leader Ban Ki-moon of South Korea, who this week became the world's body's 8th Secretary General, succeeding Kofi Annan. The Telegraph said the first signs of sexual exploitation of local youths in southern Sudan emerged within months of the peacekeepers' arrival in March of 2005. The UN's Children Fund, UNICEF, drafted an international report detailing the problem. The newspaper said Sudan's government had gathered evidence including video footage of UN workers having sex with young girls. But the United Nations has yet to publicly acknowledge there was a problem or even investigate. The UN, working with African Union, is now pressing the Sudanese government to admit thousands of more peacekeepers to its Western Darfur region, where a separate civil war has raged for 3 years. This from Reuters.
In France, squatters moved into a vacant office block in Paris and also set up a tent city to raise awareness of homeless families. Three housing lobby groups took over the office buildings and then invited families to move in. The building has been nicknamed the Ministry for the Housing Crisis. Homeless Parisians are also camping out in 200 tents by the Canal Saint-Martin. Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin is to outline right-to-housing measures later today. Homelessness is becoming an election issue ahead of April's presidential poll. The squatters' campaign is being spearheaded by a group called the Children of Don Quixote. The group has also set up makeshift camps in the southern port city of Marseille, as well as Orleans, Lyon, and Toulouse. President Jacques Chirac has urged the government to speed up legislation to establish a legal right to housing, a key demand of the campaign groups for the homeless. A newspaper report said that the occupied office building in central Paris has been vacant since March 2004, but that a sale is due to go ahead on the 8th of January. A bailiff has ordered the squatters to leave. This from the BBC.
And also from the BBC, high in the Andes on the border of Chile and Argentina lies a mountain of hidden gold. It's called Pascua Lama and contains so much of the precious metal it will take 20 years to extract. And that is exactly what Canada's Barrick Gold Corporation plans to do after being given the go-ahead by both Chile and Argentina. Already, Pascua Lama is crisscrossed with roads built by the company when it was carrying out exploratory missions, and within a few years, the mountain will be stripped bare as the digging begins. Tons of gold-bearing ore need to be excavated to produce a single ounce of bullion. Once the rock has been pulverized, cyanide is used in a leaching process to extract gold and silver. The waters that flow from the area's three glaciers are crucial to local communities because the water supplies the Huasco Valley and lowlands, enabling crops to grow in the desert landscape. But some farmers fear the mine will contaminate the water and ruin their livelihoods. Opposition to the project is clear to see. As you drive through the Huasco Valley, there are several improvised signs, graffiti reading, "Barrick out and save our water." Barrick has a sordid history in many countries where its mining operations are located.
Officials say the U.S. has canceled a decision to call off a major joint military exercise with the Philippines. This comes after the Philippines handed over a U.S. Marine convicted of rape in the country into U.S. custody. the U.S. canceled the annual joint war games after a Manila court remanded Lance Corporal Daniel Smith in jail following his rape conviction on December 4th. Smith has been moved from a jail in the capital, Manila, to the U.S. Embassy. He is appealing his rape conviction and 40-year sentence. Washington said the decision broke a special bilateral agreement over the treatment of U.S. troops in the country. Under a visiting forces agreement, U.S. troops accused of crimes should remain at the U.S. Embassy until all legal processes are completed. A U.S. Embassy spokesman confirmed that Washington had decided to go ahead with the military exercises, although possibly not in February as originally planned.
And Russia has assumed a rotating presidency of the U.N. Security Council, the world body's most powerful organ, which has five newly elected members. The 15-nation council has five permanent members with veto power, the United States, Russia, China, Britain, and France, and 10 elected nations who rotate for two-year terms, five each year. South Africa, Indonesia, Italy, Belgium, and Panama took their seats as non-permanent members, replacing Argentina, Tanzania, Japan, Denmark, and Greece. Panama was a compromise candidate for Latin America after a protracted battle between Venezuela and Guatemala last year. Remaining for another year on the Council, whose decisions on peace and security are mandatory for all UN members, are Congo Republic, Ghana, Peru, Qatar, and Slovakia. This from Reuters.
A Russian official said that contracts to sell anti-aircraft weapons to Syria and Iran are being fulfilled on schedule. An unnamed source at the Defense Ministry said that at least half of the 29 TOR M1 missile systems bought by Iran have been delivered. The air defense systems are being stationed around Iran's civilian nuclear sites. The U.S. strongly opposed the contract and imposed sanctions against Russia jet maker Sukhoi and arms exporter Roboboron Export. Meanwhile, Interfax News Agency quoted Valerie Kashin, head of the Weapons Maker Engineering Design Bureau, as saying that Russia met all its commitments in 2006 under the contract to supply Syria with a anti-aircraft system. Details about the quantity and cost of the contract have not been made public. This from the AFP. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, January 3rd, 2007. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Brian Smith with assistance from Chris Andre. Our engineer is Kathleen Stevenson, and Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Martha Odom.
And I'm Brian Smith. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR.
If you'd like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email her at amnews@kbu.org. Portland area weather calls for rain with temperatures in the low 50s.
And coming up later this morning on KBOO at 7:30, Barbara Bernstein hosts Locus Focus Talk Radio. She'll take a look back at the long, strange trip of 2006.
Coming up later this morning on KBOO, at 9 on the KBOO Bike Show, Aileen and Tori interview Jonathan Mouse from BikePortland.org, the world's most popular bike blog.
And at 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller speaks with physicist, systems theorist, and author Fritjof Capra, a founding director of the Center for Ecoliteracy, which promotes ecology and systems thinking in primary and secondary education.
At 11, it's Democracy Now! And at noon on Alternative Radio, the speaker is philosopher, teacher, and author George Lakoff on Framing the Debate. And on the eve of the 74th Legislative and 110th Congressional Sessions, Oregon business and elected power people will assemble at the Convention Center on Thursday, January 4th, for the 5th Annual Oregon Leadership Summit. The summit is the premier public policy forum in Oregon. And while the main theme is gaining sustainable advantage in the global economy, education, healthcare, and transportation will be major issues being discussed. The game plan and list of players can be found at OregonLeadershipSummit.org.
It's 7:30. Stay tuned for Locus Focus next.